Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its fourth season. On every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home in the Hamptons to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking up an amazing meal. Join Ina as she crafts a classic cocktail with journalist Frank Bruni and discusses the ins and outs of Yorkshire pudding with actress Emily Mortimer. If you're looking for great conversations about and over good food, tune in to Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, I'm Francis Lamb, and this is Splendid Table Selects, our mini-podcast on the stuff that makes us better cooks and eaters. Our presenting sponsor is Bob's Red Mill. They're an employee-owned company that's offered organic, gluten-free, stone-ground products for decades, and they're experts at making healthy taste amazing. Hard cider is a thing. I mean, hard cider has always kind of been a thing. Like, way back in the early days of America, it was easily the most popular drink in the country because it was super easy to make and it was safer to drink than water. But then beer kind of ran it over and wine added insult to injury. Well, now, cider's back. Small batch cider makers are popping up all over and everyone loves a delicious comeback story. Reporter Rebecca Shear talked to Apple expert Amy Traverso about the cider revival.
Amy, nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So Amy, I love what you write in your book. You refer to exploring cider as a worthy pursuit, and you write that the noble grape may sit at the top of the enological pyramid, but apples can produce wines and ciders with tremendous complexity, variability, and plain deliciousness. So how do you do that? How do you produce cider? What is it exactly?
Cider is fermented apple juice. So in the U.S., we get a little confused because cider has come to be what we call fresh apple juice. But in the rest of the world, and historically, cider referred to apple juice that was fermented. And the reason apple juice was fermented is because before refrigeration, it was kind of hard to stop that from happening. So apples would just ferment naturally. So, you know, at some point in history, and it's hard to find exactly when, people started figuring out that apple juice could ferment and it could be alcohol and it could be tasty. And so cider culture evolved. I think the first place we really see it taking root is in Spain, which I think a lot of people don't realize. There's a massive cider culture in Spain. But in any case, cider at one time in the U.S. was the most popular beverage for early Americans. It was safer than water. It was easy to make. It's a pretty simple process. It can go wrong. And I think people who have had funky cider know that. But it's actually a fairly simple process of, you know, you crush the apples, you extract the juice, and you let it ferment either with its own natural yeasts that exist on the skin or with, you know, special maybe champagne or wine yeast that you add to be a little more controlled about it. But say in John Adams' time, he drank a tankard of cider every day.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was children drank it because it was fairly low in alcohol and it was safer than water in a lot of places. So what happened was over time, cider kind of lost ground between the temperance movement and the arrival of Eastern European immigrants and the rise of beer culture. British people also brought beer, but cider was a little bit easier to make. So that's why it was more popular in the early era.
And it seems like it's had a resurgence.
It is having a huge resurgence. It's really exciting. It's gotten to the point where it's really all I drink. I love it, and I love seeing people rediscovering because it was part of our culture that we lost and really forgot about. So since about the 1980s in this country, when some makers, in particular West County Cider in Western Massachusetts, Terry and Judith Mahoney were some early cider reintroduction pioneers. In Europe, in England, cider's having huge revival over the past 10 years, and you're seeing growth of about 100% every year in terms of cider consumption. So it's growing quickly. It's still a relatively small corner, pocket of domestic wine and beer and spirits consumption, but it's really growing quickly. It's the fastest growing drinks category in the country.
Now, what regions produce cider?
So in our country, it's really concentrated in the Northeast, the upper Midwest, sort of Great Lakes area, the Pacific Northwest and some in the Virginia area. There's also a lot happening in British Columbia, Ontario, and Quebec. So there's a lot in Canada as well. And if you think about, you know, how hard it can be, there are certainly grapes that do grow well in northern climates, and winemakers are getting better and better at it. I mean, here in New England, where I live, there's actually really good wine being made. But apples thrive in cold climates, and it is a truly local beverage. So, you know, if you want to eat and drink locally, apple cider is a great option. And as more and more cider makers are coming online, you know, you're more and more likely to find apple cider being made nearby.
Well, if we want to go out and buy a bottle of cider, what should we look for?
You may want to start with what's local to you, because it's always fun to go to the cidery. It's always fun to see it made. It's great to support your local people. But, you know, cider is international. It's made all over the world. The tricky thing is finding it. Because cider is still in a resurgence, it can be hard to get. For me, it can be hard to find West Coast cider, for example. You know, France, England, Spain, they don't always export their best stuff, so it can be hard to even find that. So France is a little bit better. So my advice would be start with what's local to you. Then look for some good ciders that are being exported. For example, there's a French maker called Etienne Dupont from Normandy who tends to export some pretty great stuff. I've seen it in many stores around the country. Another French brand that exports is Eric Bordelais. You can often find that. But the nice thing about cider is it's a really low investment. Cider tends to be pretty inexpensive. You can get a great bottle for $8. You know, $12 is sort of at the upper end. You know, in general, I think France is a good place to start, because the French are really good at making just delicious ciders with enough kind of residual sweetness in them that they're super friendly to the new drinker. Spanish cider is really great, but it tends to be a little more acidic, which if you're new to it, you might not like as much. You know, where I live, there's so many great ciders coming online. There's Bantam Cider here in Cambridge that everybody's crazy about, and suddenly it's on tap in so many restaurants. It's really fun. So, you know, it's always good to sort of look around and see what's coming online where you live.
Nice. So once we get our hands on a bottle, or we get it on tap somewhere, what would you recommend pairing with cider?
I think cider is one of the most food-friendly beverages in the world. It does have that fruitiness and can have sweetness. Some of them are very dry, but some of them have sweetness, which make them pair with so many foods. And also it has the fizz. So when you're eating food and then you drink your cider, the little bubbles are like cleaning off your tongue. They're balancing any richness or fattiness in your food. So it can go with you know, foods anywhere from curries to barbecue to creamy sauces. But if you want sort of rules, you can say, okay, well, cider from Normandy is going to go really well with foods from there. So your creamy cheeses like Camembert, or, you know, mussels cooked in a cider cream sauce is going to be amazing. If you're in Spain, you're going to really enjoy that with tapas, with, you know, pork dishes that have some fat, or with grilled steaks, things that are hearty because of that extra acidity. In England, it's actually ciders. Some of the commercial ciders that tend to be sweeter are really good with fish and chips and fried food, because they have that sweetness and that fizz, but also great with cheddar. You know, in general, cheeses pair incredibly well with cider. Oh, and blue cheeses for sweeter ciders, like in particular ice ciders, which are kind of very concentrated, sweet, nectary dessert ciders, are incredible with blue cheese and with nuts. So you can really do a nice cheese platter and have a cider tasting, and even include some dried sausages, and you'd have a really great feast.
Well, Amy Traverso, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Amy Traverso is food editor at Yankee Magazine, co-host of WGBH's Weekends with Yankee, and author of the Apple Lovers Cookbook. Rebecca Shear is a longtime public radio reporter who currently hosts, writes, and produces Circle Round, the storytelling podcast for kids and grown-ups from WBUR. You can find a recipe for Amy's apple and chestnut stuffed pork loin with cider sauce on splendidtable.org. While you're there, you should check out her apple variety cheat sheet. It's a great source for choosing the best apples to use in your recipes. And I went apple picking with my family a couple weeks ago, and I wish I had it with me because I was just the worst. Like, I'm so bad at remembering the apples, and I was just running around like, hey, is this one good for pie? Is this one good for pie? Like, people were so sick of me. So go to splendidtable.org and get Amy's apple variety cheat sheet. And speaking of pie, thank you again to our presenting sponsor, Bob's Red Mill. We are obviously in the thick of apple pie season, an apple crisp, an apple cake, an apple buckle season, etc., etc., etc. Bob's Red Mill is a great source for all of your baking needs, from whole grains and flours to foolproof gluten-free baking mixes. For more information about all their products or to check out their recipes, visit bobsredmill.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to download our next Selects podcast. Sally Swift talks to our OG, Lynn Rosetto Casper. It's all about Thanksgiving sides. If you like what you heard today, please leave us a review, tell a friend. Until next time, I'm Francis Lamb.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.